Historical What Ifs. Historical What Ifs.
History hinges on moments so small they could fit in the palm of your hand. Yet their consequences echo through centuries and shape the world we live in today. This is Historical What Ifs, where we explore the alternate timelines that could have emerged from a single different decision, a missed opportunity, or a stroke of luck that went the other way. Today's episode examines one of those pivotal moments and traces the extraordinary chain of events that might have followed if history had taken just one small turn in a different direction. Welcome to Historical What Ifs, reimagining pivotal moments. Historical What Ifs.
Today, we're tackling a name that I think everyone learns in school. Ferdinand Magellan, the man who sailed around the world.
Except, of course, he didn't. He died halfway through, in the Philippines. But his expedition, the one ship and 18 men who made it back, did complete the journey. It's a story of incredible tenacity, brutality, and discovery.
And that's the story we all know. But we're here to ask a different question, a much bigger one. What if it never happened at all? What if Ferdinand Magellan, the determined, disgruntled Portuguese navigator, never convinced the King of Spain to fund his audacious, some would say suicidal, voyage?
It's a question that's always fascinated me, personally. We often see these voyages as inevitable, a natural progression of history. But they weren't. They were incredibly fragile undertakings, balanced on the whims of kings, the courage of a few hundred men, and a whole lot of luck. Magellan's expedition could have failed at a dozen different points before it even left the dock.
Exactly. And for me, the interest lies in the ripple effect. We're talking about the dawn of a truly global consciousness. This voyage proved, in a very practical, visceral way, that the world was round and that all its oceans were connected. If you remove that singular, world-changing event from the timeline in 1522, how long does it take for that knowledge to emerge? Does it emerge in the same way?
Does another explorer, perhaps from a rival nation, achieve it first? And what does that mean for the balance of power, for trade, for the very map of the world as we know it?
The questions are just immense. So today, we're going to set the stage. We'll explore the high-stakes world of the early 16th century, the fierce rivalry between Spain and Portugal, the almost mythical allure of the Spice Islands, and the sheer audacity of Magellan's proposal.
And then, we'll do what we do best. We'll remove him from the equation. We'll imagine a world where the Victoria never returns, where the Pacific remains a vast, terrifying unknown, and where the first circumnavigation is still a dream waiting for its moment.
It's a journey into a past that almost was, and the consequences are more profound than you might think.
And that rivalry is the absolute key, isn't it? It wasn't just a friendly competition. We're talking about a level of geopolitical tension between Spain and Portugal that was, frankly, defining the era. They had literally carved up the known world between them with the Treaty of Tordesillas.
Yeah. Drawn a line down the map and said, this half is mine, that half is yours. But the problem was, they didn't know where the line ended on the other side of the world. And right in that zone of uncertainty were the Moluccas, the Spice Islands.
The ultimate prize. It's hard for us to comprehend now, but spices like cloves and nutmeg were worth more than their weight in gold. They weren't just for flavoring food. They were medicine. They were preservatives. They were the absolute pinnacle of luxury and status.
Owning the source of those spices was like owning all the oil wells and all the microchip factories in the world today. It was a license to print money on a national scale. And both Portugal and Spain believed, or at least argued, that the Spice Islands fell on their side of the line.
But Portugal had the advantage, right? They had the eastern route going around Africa. It was established. It was theirs. The Spanish were desperate for a back door.
Desperate is the word. And that's where this disgruntled Portuguese nobleman comes in. Ferdinand Magellan. He wasn't just some random sailor with a dream. he was an experienced navigator who had served Portugal, had been to the East Indies. He knew what was at stake.
And he had a falling out with the Portuguese king, Manuel I. A serious one. Over his pension, of all things, after being wounded in Morocco. The king basically told him to go peddle his ideas elsewhere.
Which is just an incredible historical blunder when you think about it. The king of Portugal, the dominant maritime power, essentially gifted the most ambitious explorer of the age to his greatest rival.
So, Magellan goes to the young King Charles of Spain with this audacious proposal. He says, "I believe the Spice Islands are actually in the Spanish half of the world, and I can prove it by sailing west."
A westward route, meaning he had to find a way through or around this massive unexplored continent that was in the way. South America. No one had ever done it. No one even knew for sure if there was a passage.
And that's the sheer audacity of it. He was selling a theory. A hunch, really. Based on sketchy maps and a whole lot of self-belief. He was promising the King of Spain the greatest commercial prize on earth, as the king would just fund a voyage into a complete unknown.
You can just imagine the scene in the Spanish court. The old established advisors probably thought he was insane. A traitorous Portuguese captain promising a mythical strait to a ghost archipelago on the other side of an ocean no European had ever crossed. It sounds like a fantasy novel. The risk was astronomical.
And the risk was so much more than just financial, wasn't it? We're talking about a young king, Charles I of Spain, who had just inherited the throne. He's a teenager, really. He needs to project strength, to show his rivals, especially the Portuguese, that Spain is a power to be reckoned with. Saying yes to Magellan wasn't just a calculated bet on spices, it was a statement of intent. A massive high-stakes gamble to outmaneuver his chief rival on the world stage.
Oh, I think that's a crucial point. It was a power play. But can you imagine the arguments happening behind closed doors? The advisors, the men who had served his grandfather Ferdinand, probably pulling their hair out. They'd be saying, "Your Majesty, this man is a Portuguese, a renegade. He couldn't get his own king to fund this madness. So now he comes to you? He's promising a passage that might not even exist, based on maps that are little more than rumor."
And the maps themselves? I mean, they were practically works of fiction in some places. They were pieced together from sailors' tales and ancient theories. The advisors would have pointed to the sheer, terrifying blankness of the charts beyond the coast of Brazil. They'd say, "We're sending 5 ships and over 200 of your subjects into that. Into nothing?" The potential for total embarrassing failure was immense.
Immense. And it wasn't just about losing ships and men. If the expedition vanished without a trace, which was the most likely outcome, Charles would look like a fool. A naive young king who'd been swindled by a smooth-talking Portuguese defector. It would have been a huge political blow, validating Portugal's dominance and making Spain look reckless.
So let's play that out for a second. Let's say that cooler, more cautious heads prevail. The treasurer points out the astronomical cost. The navigators point out the technical insanity of it. And a key bishop whispers in the king's ear that it's hubris to challenge God's design. And Charles says no. He thanks Magellan for his time and sends him away.
What does Magellan even do then? I mean, his bridges with Portugal are burned. He's now shopped his idea to their biggest rival and been rejected. Does he have any credibility left?
That's the question, isn't it? Does he try to go to the French? Or the English, who are at this point a much lesser naval power? Or does the dream just die with him? Does he retire to some quiet town in Spain and spend the rest of his life drawing maps of a voyage that never was?
I have a hard time picturing that. A man with that much ambition and, frankly, that much ego. I don't see him just giving up. But maybe the idea itself becomes toxic. It's Magellan's folly. The courts of Europe hear that the Spanish, who were desperate for a western route, looked at the plan and decided the risk was too great.
So, the concept of a westward circumnavigation doesn't just get postponed, it gets actively discredited. It's filed away as a fantasy. And the Pacific Ocean? My God, the Pacific Ocean remains this horrifying, immeasurable void. No one knows that it takes 3 months to cross. No one knows its true scale.
Exactly. Without Magellan's expedition stumbling across it, the sheer size of that ocean remains a complete mystery. The next person who tries to sail west from the Americas would be doing so with absolutely no idea if the journey would take a month or a year. The psychological barrier to even attempting it would be colossal. It might not be attempted again for another 50, maybe even 100 years.
100 years? I mean, just think about the sheer scale of that. In our timeline, by 1622, you have the Dutch Golden Age in full swing. You have English colonies in North America. You have trade routes, however tenuous, spanning the entire globe. But in this alternate timeline, the two great halves of the world are still fundamentally disconnected. The Atlantic and the Pacific might as well be on different planets.
And the development of the Americas would be completely different. Spain's focus would be entirely on extracting wealth from Mexico and Peru and shipping it east back to Europe. There's no Manila galleon trade, no incentive to build ports on the western coast of the Americas for anything other than local exploration. The entire Pacific coast, from California down to Chile, becomes a strategic backwater.
It really reframes the whole legacy of the voyage, doesn't it? We remember it for the one ship that made it back, the Victoria. But the real immediate impact wasn't the circumnavigation itself, it was the discovery of the sheer horrifying size of the Pacific. That knowledge, that single data point, reshaped every map and every strategic calculation in Europe overnight. Removing it, it's like removing a cornerstone of global consciousness.
You know, as we've been talking, a thought keeps nagging at me. We're framing this delay, this 100-year gap, as a kind of loss. A loss of knowledge, a slowing of progress. But was it a loss for everyone?
That's a heavy question. Go on.
Well, what does another century of isolation mean for the peoples of the Pacific Islands? For the Philippines, where Magellan met his end? That first contact was violent, and it was the beginning of a long and brutal period of colonization. Delaying that by a century, that's three or four generations who live without that specific European intrusion.
That's a profound point. The age of discovery and the age of conquest are, they're the same thing, just viewed from opposite sides of the ship's railing. So in our what if, that global scale confrontation is postponed. It doesn't mean conflicts don't happen, but the nature of them would be entirely different. The world remains multipolar for longer.
So, when I think about a final takeaway, for me, it's that Magellan's voyage wasn't just about proving the world was round. In a way, it was about proving that it was small. Small enough to be circled, small enough to be understood, and ultimately, small enough to be dominated by a single power.
By shrinking the map, he expanded the scope of imperial ambition to a planetary scale for the very first time. Without him, that conceptual leap just doesn't happen. Not for a long, long time.
The quest to circle the globe becomes a slower, more gradual process. Perhaps it's finally achieved, not by a single dramatic voyage, but piecemeal by different explorers from different nations over decades. A world where the global map was stitched together, not ripped open. The butterfly effect of history reminds us that the world we know today is just one of countless possibilities, shaped by moments of chance, choice, and consequence that could have easily gone another way. This has been Historical What Ifs, where every episode reveals how fragile our timeline really is, and how different decisions by our ancestors might have created an entirely different present. Understanding these alternate possibilities doesn't just satisfy our curiosity. It helps us appreciate how remarkable it is that we ended up in this particular version of history.